Good evening, May 19th, 2011. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show. A tremendous amount of material to cover tonight. A tremendous diversity of topics. The main science topic I will be talking about is how comets produce CMEs in light of the big explosion that occurred on the sun this past week, and in light of the complete denial of this by NASA and spaceweather.com, the Tier 2 mouthpiece for NASA, the apologetics site that tries to promote as standard knowledge, just happens to be that way, the mouthpiece for NASA. NASA has many mouthpieces, but the point is, first of all, I will describe what happened. The video is on my webpage. You can go there and see it right at the top. There's an immense flare that comes out of the sun. There's a link to a sub link on my page. It's a couple megabytes, so if you have slow line, wait to see it load, but it's worth watching. And I want to note that we have hundreds, literally hundreds of these comets coming in near the sun, and they're not hitting the sun to cause the explosion. They're nearby. They discharge the local solar capacitor. And so NASA comes in and says, oh, well, it wasn't even near the sun. How could a wispy little snowball cause a CME? Well, tonight I'm going to explain how this happens with the plasma discharge comet model and exactly what is going on. And so anyway, that's the main science topic. How does a small comet, and by the way, this was not exactly a small comet. It was very large. It had a companion, which means it was gravitationally significant. It had enough gravitational field to hold a companion that was very far away as it came into the sun. Okay, so that's the main science topic. How do comets cause CMEs on the sun? Okay, so first of all, get ready for something big happening. There are so many movements on in the world today, with the globalists talking about reducing world population. There's such a dichotomy of things happening as they allow vast numbers of people to come into Europe, the United States, into England, Australia, and people from Arab countries, people from Latin countries, primarily Mexico, into the United States, having many, many, many little kids, like right away. 3, 4, 5, you see 13, 14-year-old little girls pregnant, because they know the first thing, if they can have a baby here, they don't have to really deal with immigration. The baby issue gives them all kinds of benefits, including medical, education, etc. So the first thing they do when they come here is have a baby. So you're going to find a population explosion here, and just like it destroyed California, it's going to destroy the rest of the country. It's already in progress. It's inevitable. So at any rate, that's just one of the movements. But these are three things that happened in the last couple weeks. The IMF had going down, and these people, you have to understand, do whatever they want. The head of the IMF had some kind of sexual forward activity towards a maid in a hotel. These people do this all the time. This is standard fare. If you're a head of any of these organizations or high up in these organizations, they compromise these people immediately. Congressmen, as soon as they get to Congress, they send women over and then have videotaping of sexual activity so that all of these people are compromised, and all they have to do is hold that over their heads. And they can make them do anything because their career, their lives, everything, their families, everything would be at risk for their poor judgment. But at any rate, the head of the IMF, these people do things all the time and are not caught, are not prosecuted, but to hold him without bail for this kind of an event in New York City is the banking city, is really an indication that they're getting rid of this guy. And what did he do? Is he going to go out and talk? What exactly did this guy do? He was going to be president of France, very high up in the New World Order. But remember one thing, if you see somebody's name and they're visible in the public, they are a used pawn. Excuse me. They are a used pawn in the New World Order. They are dispensable, and they're people who have been used. Just a second. They're people who have been used and are dispensable. So when you see Arnold Schwarzenegger, the head of the IMF, a few weeks ago I reported on the head of the Egyptian Antiquities, and this guy was taken out for a small real estate aberration in some kind of real estate deal. But he was removed from his office in Antiquities in Egypt, the highest office probably in the world dealing with archaeology. Tremendous power, tremendous reign. His say extends far and wide over the world, but being removed from his position overnight because of a small real estate deal. Arnold Schwarzenegger, how long have the people in power well known that he had a love child? And all of a sudden right now being leaked to destroy his career, destroy his family. He will never, ever come off of this and do anything politically again. But there again, people behind the scenes obviously would have known about this, and they were holding that card until there was a time to get rid of Arnold, his usefulness being over. So they use these people and then spit them out. There's a saying that I have, don't shake hands with the Bushes. You see the people that do being destroyed, either killed or lives destroyed, and once their usefulness is done. But that's not the point. The point is that it looks like all kinds of major movements are in place for something to happen right now, as were the all kinds of events that have happened recently, including earthquakes, including the situation in Japan. So at any rate, all I want to say is it looks like there's a house cleaning going on of high pawns. That's what I will call them, pawns, because these people have egos. And that's how you keep a person in office. Remember Arnold Schwarzenegger smiling and on camera and with Maria Shriver, beauty queen. And now all of that destroyed overnight in the flash. As now you got to ask, where was this leaked? Because it was held behind the scenes so tightly for so long, somebody leaked it, and it was from. And Arnold's got to know. He said his time is over. His usefulness. He's now realizing that Arnold wasn't so big after all. He was just a useful pawn. And once they discover they've been used and they were a pawn, nothing more, then those people become a liability. So you will see either a lot of these people are taken out completely very shortly thereafter. So how many people have we seen associated with the Clintons? The list is like 50, 60 people who are closely associated with them, lives completely destroyed or dead. So at any rate, they, as I said, they have something on everyone in power. These people are disposable, and as I said, anybody in the public view is not at the top. They are pawns. The people at the top, you will never see their name, you will never hear their name, you don't know who they are, where they are, and so this is the way the secret societies work. And they use these people with egos. Arnold had a huge ego. He was the Terminator, married to Maria Shriver, beauty queen. She was a television celebrity, on and on. You know, so these people have enormous egos. But to be brought down in one crashing blow just shows how vulnerable they are also. So all I can say is I believe we're getting ready for an event. Remember, May is the month when we can see the visible part of the solar system down below, down under, so to speak. This is because of the attitude of the Earth tilted 23.5 degrees from the plane that we rotate around the Sun in, and that Earth's orbit is around the Sun, the ecliptic it's called. That's our reference point for the solar system, the plane of Earth's orbit. And the Earth's axis, spin axis, tilts 23.5 degrees from that plane, and that means that at a certain time of year, the southern hemisphere is only visible during that time of year, because during the rest of the year, the sun is blocking the view. So then right now we have a full moon, so in 2 weeks, that gives a very, very short window in 2 weeks of the visibility of the sun when the new moon is occurring, and there will be very dark skies, so to etc. So the window of viewing is very short. So anyway, more on that. I'll be reporting on that in the future. Okay, a Comet Elenin update. First of all, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Comet Elenin. I spent a lot of time showing you how that was a complete misinformation story, started by NASA long before that comet was discovered back in December 2010. And that's typical of NASA. And now you're starting to see why NASA makes public claims. These are the Tier 2 NASA scientists, Don Yeoman out in JPL, or the other, like the head of the NEAR space program for looking near-Earth asteroids. All of these people claiming they don't have any equipment to look at comets. They leave that to the amateurs, things like that. And why is NASA, the people in charge of so-called protecting our planet from errant celestial objects, why are they claiming so publicly that they have no equipment to see comets? Well, that's when comets occur. They can defer that and not have to talk about it. Okay, anyway, I will be talking about Comet Elenin briefly. First of all, though, this is a very important topic. I talked last week, I said the way you would track radiation from the Japanese reactors that blew up, and then to cool them down, they had many reactors because the electric system, the pumps, etc., the backup electricity to run the pumps to cool the reactors were not working. So they had to use seawater to cool down the reactors and then dump that radioactive seawater back into the ocean. And so now that water is in the ocean. You have radioactive waste in the ocean. So now scientists from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute are studying this, and they will spend the next few years. They've sent a research boat to Japan, and I said on my show last week how ridiculous it is for the United States to have stations around the country and measure radiation and say, oh, there's no radiation here. Oops, there's no radiation over there. Oh, there's no problem, because that's not the way it works. Radiation from Japan in the air comes across in the jet stream, and the jet stream is a rather narrow, snaking stream of air, and the water and dust accumulates in that jet stream, and then it comes, and if it dips down in certain places, or there's rain, or there's moisture that comes in from outside the planet, I've shown how that works in my weather work, etc., then there are mechanisms where in one location, many times, all of that radiation dumps out onto one location. And if the U.S. sensors are not working, or if they're saying, oh, gee, there's a lot of radiation here but not over there, this must be an aberration, we'll just erase that measurement. I can just see the scientists doing that. The Tier 2 scientists that work for the government that don't want a bad result from their location. They don't want to show there's a lot of radiation when that site over there is not showing any, but they're not tracking it in a scientific manner. They're not tracking it from the source and watching where it goes. That would be a very interesting, that would be the correct way to do it. Okay, so now, as I reported last week, the U.S. and Canadian monitoring stations are going on a weekly reporting, not a daily reporting. how ridiculous when the radiation is coming in and dumping randomly around the country and then continuing on to Europe, to England, and all other countries around the world. So at any rate, I said, you have to track it. Well, I thought it was interesting that the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute now has a study to go over. They're sending a ship over by Japan, and I thought, gee, they're going to do this in a scientific manner, until I saw how they were going to do the report. And so I'm going to explain to you how terrible, how ridiculous it is, and how they're going to waste the next 2 years, and everybody's going to think, oh, they're studying the ocean. Excuse me. They're studying the ocean currents, and we're going to have knowledge of what's going on with the Japanese radiation. Excuse me. I had to take a sip of water from my clean water from my Dalton water filter, by the way, which I use every day. Little plug there for the water filters. But at any rate, and by the way, I have in my ear. It came out of track Fukushima radiation to study ocean currents. This is 2 days ago from Forbes. And it says the highlight here, radioactive isotopes expected to reach U.S. coast within 1 to 2 years. They're saying a shorter period of time to reach Hawaii. They start out by saying one of the things that several people hope to do in this study by measuring these isotopes, even at levels when they're not harmful. So they start right out of the chute giving a result of a 2-year study before it even starts. This is horrible science. It's the way NASA does their science. They give you the result before they go out there. And then, of course, the scientific study is going to confirm that. And if they didn't, they wouldn't get any future funding. If they didn't, they wouldn't have even gotten this in the first place. Okay, so now let's see. Let me reread this statement. This is in the first paragraph of this write-up on this. They're talking about how the radiation in the ocean currents will weave around the world, especially the Pacific Ocean, as time goes on. And then they say, but that's one of the things that several people hope to do by measuring these isotopes, even at levels when they're not harmful. So they're telling you right up front, even though they haven't done a thing yet, that the levels are not harmful. And they're doing this, they say, as a scientific effort to better understand ocean currents, because now they have a tracer in the ocean. But let me explain what they're saying here. It says scientists have predicted that Fukushima's longer living isotopes, such as cesium-137 with a half-life of 30 years, will reach Hawaii in about a year and the coast of California in 2 to 3 years. Now listen to this next part. And they keep repeating the word diluted. I'm going to read here that says, by that time, the isotopes should be significantly diluted from mixing with ocean water. Here's another statement below. It says, but it also dilutes along the way, causing a lot of mixing and decreasing radioactivity as it moves offshore. They're talking about in the immediate vicinity of Japan. Now, there's another statement right after that. It says, scientists, whoever they are, doesn't give any names, scientists do not expect Fukushima radiation to present a health risk in American waters, mostly because of dilution. There's that dilution word again. And some of the properties of radioactive isotopes can help them understand how these waters behave. So they're claiming that this is just your average run-of-the-mill study of ocean currents, not a big deal, and there's no expected problem with the levels of radiation in the water because of dilution. Let me go on here. Here's another. They're talking about how the Japanese intentionally dumped 11,500 tons of water that contain high concentrations of contaminants, and an unknown amount of contaminated water leaked into the ocean. Okay, then it says here, I consider this to be the largest accidental release to the ocean, even larger than Chernobyl because of the proximity to the ocean. Busseler is the name of the guy talking here. Merely by being on the ocean, one... excuse me. Merely by being on the ocean, one of that release got into the ocean immediately. Okay, it goes on to say that scientists still don't know the full content of the release that reached the ocean. It says that the Japanese regularly test the seawater only for iodine-131 and for two isotopes of cesium, but they have not tested for other radioactive isotopes that interest oceanographers, such as tritium and strontium, which have been detected in Hawaii. Plutonium has been found in soil near the plant. Listen to this article. I cannot believe the scientists are writing this. I'm going to read it exactly so that you understand what they're saying here. It says, Tokyo Electric Power Company conducted one seawater test for plutonium, which had been found in soil around the plant, and reported it non-detectable. But wait a minute. They're saying, first of all, they detected it, and then they're saying, but it was reported as non-detectable. But the Japanese have released no information about these isotopes, speaking of iodine-129 and other isotopes, radioactive isotopes. Okay, so then the sediment near Fukushima may present a risk to the local population for some time. Then they say when radioactivity falls on the land, it stays put. So there are very short pathways from gas into the cows and into milk supply or directly into the water supply you drink. These are totally patently false statements, because they make it sound like this radiation just goes a little way and falls on the ground. No, this was blown up into the jet stream. It continues to go in the jet stream. And then they're talking about how the Japanese had little choice. Well, that's because the systems were never designed properly. If there was a accident, then none of these systems are designed to withstand major accidents. Now, they keep repeating the concept of dilution in the water. I want to make it very clear that this radiation is moving through the world, some of the world's biggest fishing grounds. And let me talk about mercury. We all know about mercury and mercury concentration in fish. Mercury is a deadly poison. How does all this mercury get into fish, into salmon, into tuna, into other types of seafood that are brought in for food? How does it get into them? How does it get into inland lakes where there are, say, paper factories nearby? It gets into the water table. There's dilution there also. Shouldn't the mercury be diluted to the point where it's not a problem? No, so once again, they're lying by pointing in the wrong direction. Here's what happens when the plankton or other small microscopic sea creatures filter water, and that's what they do to get their minerals, to get their life sustenance. They filter the seawater. The radioactive particles stay there. The mercury stays there. Then the next larger creature in the ocean comes along and eats them in mass. Look at all of the small creatures that a whale eats. And when a whale eats that, it accumulates all of that radioactive material, or in the case of other fish such as tuna, such as salmon, there's a whole food chain that leads up to them, and they are consuming all of the radiation that's in the ocean because it's been filtered through these small plants and small sea animals. Then eventually it's eaten up, is concentrated up the food chain. So here are scientists, oceanographers, who are looking for traces of radioactivity to understand ocean currents, and they're not talking about the real issue, that this concentrates and accumulates. This is what I've been talking all along. So here you have Tier 2 scientists on a 2 or 3 year study, which totally whitewashes the entire issue. Radioactivity from Japan's nuclear reactor has already been detected in milk in the United States. It's going to be in the plants then when they're harvested in the fall in the United States. When the seed or corn seed that would be fed to a cow, when that spends all summer with rain and accumulation of radioactivity from the ground, that the water that comes up through the plant, that water comes up and then evaporates out the top of the plant, but it leaves all of the trace elements. That's where the seed gets all of its goodness, but that's where it also is going to get all of the radioactivity. So it's this concentration of radioactivity is that topic is completely being sidestepped and not mentioned in any of these studies. And the people on top know this. The bottom line, the United States and all of these countries, Japan, is going to see increased radioactivity in the food supply, and it's not going to be measured because nobody thinks it's there. It's very simple. If you don't look for it, you're not going to find it. On to the comment, Ellen, an update. It became very clear this past week as people helping me out did research, trying to find out where the comet Elenin hoax actually came from. Now, it appears that comet Elenin, and this, by the way, is just from NASA and the comet Elenin, the Elenin homepage, Space Obs. There's really sparse information on this. A couple other magazines have referred to those. But if you go back to the original source, there's no third-party independent reporting on this comet. And the pages differ with the information. So why is that? A very interesting thing happened this last week. A blogger and fan of mine posted on the Elenin comet homepage. It's called spaceob.net, I believe, or .org. I think it's a .net, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure the dot suffix on that homepage, but it's Space Obs. You can find it just by searching for comet Elenin. But at any rate, one day after somebody had posted on there, go to listen to Jim McCanney's show, go to his webpage for an update on comet Elenin, those blogs were taken down. And then when it was pointed out that the blogs have been copied and placed elsewhere, gee, magically they reappeared. It looked pretty funny. But at any rate, there's a lot of hanky-panky going on around this issue of comet Elenin. And once again, I'll repeat, there is no issue of comet Elenin. There's no issue that it caused earthquakes in Japan, that there are alignments of any kind causing anything. People are using or trying to simulate my work and then claiming that it's going to cause all kinds of problems. I don't have anything to do with those people. I don't use blogs. I don't. But here's the point. Here's the point I want to make, other than explaining once again that comet Elenin, I would call it phenomenon, is a hoax. It appears there is a small comet with the orbit given by NASA. There's no independent confirmation of that. It's certainly small, very small, because it's not visible. If it were a big comet with a big, big nucleus, big enough to cause gravitational problems on Earth with a near passage, and by the way, it is not coming anywhere from near Earth. But the point is, if it were the size of our moon, if it were the size of Mercury or anything planetary, it would be visible, easily visible to the naked eye. It is not visible with even moderate equipment, astronomical telescopes. And there have been a lot of people who've looked for it that could not find it. So there's something very funny going on here. But the point is that the mixing of my material with people claiming that aliens are confirming my science, it's just ramblings of crazy people. This was set up, obviously, long before this comet was ever discovered. And once again, NASA then points the way and says, oh, go look at Wikipedia or these other amateur sites. NASA doesn't have equipment to look for comets, which is absolutely absurd. As I have said, NASA has gone overboard explaining to the public that it does not have equipment to look at comets. And this is so absurd. This would be like a baker saying, I don't have pans to cook with. This would be like a car mechanic saying he doesn't have any wrenches. NASA doesn't, and with the NEAR program and the JPL and all of the, we know they have ground-based equipment. It can tell you right where it is. It's in Haleakala in Hawaii. This is equipment meant to look for near-Earth objects. It's an entire, some of the biggest supercomputer chains of supercomputers in the world are located there to process the information. So, but see, you're getting this information from the useful Tier 2 scientists. They're the ones that pawn off the garbage science to the public. So they, it's very important for NASA to present this image that they don't look at comets, or that if something big comes in, as in the case with Hale-Bopp in the last decade, NASA's cover story is that it doesn't have any equipment and they don't have any interest in looking at comets, even though they're chartered to chart everything in the near-Earth vicinity and let us know if there's anything dangerous. Okay, so that's the situation, but here's what we found out, some researchers found out. Now, in the so-called internet conversation going on, one page would refer to another page. And that page, excuse me, the one page would refer to another page. And, okay, so that one page would refer to another page. And seemingly in a conversation of disjoint people, what we found out is these people, these pages, are all the same people. So it looks like they're having this disjoint conversation, this unrelated page over here referencing somebody over here. It's all the same people. And it very much smells the same, exact same tone as the disinformation campaign that was started in the early 1995 era regarding the crazy lady talks to alien Planet X May 15th, 2003. And notice that this is in May once again. May is the chosen month for this kind of activity. I'll be talking in a minute about the comet that hit the sun last week, and NASA once again making a claim that it does not have information about comets. Now, let's look at the, let's just jump up to the, oh, let me finish about Comet Elenin. The point is that what we found is all of these people with dialogue in YouTube videos, and all of this about Comet Elenin, they're all the same group of people. And somebody stole information from somebody's web page. This is all the same group of people setting up a big thing about Comet Elenin. So let me make it perfectly clear. Number one, NASA knew about Comet Elenin long before it was discovered. The dates and all of this timing of alignments to correspond with things like Japanese earthquakes or something, this was all coordinated long ago before it was ever discovered by an amateur in early December of 2010. So then all of a sudden the web pages appear, the misinformation, and this is standard disinformation web page manipulation where they set up a dialogue, YouTube videos, a blanket coverage of this topic where you find it on Wikipedia, on Google searches, etc. There are web pages that are set up that are all coordinated. So that basically everybody gets this thing, Comet Elenin, it's going to crash into Earth, it's going to change its orbit, there's all kinds of dialogue. And early in February, maybe it was even January, I was on a radio show and some woman called in. She said, could you please comment on Comet Elenin? Those people that call into those radio shows, and this happens to me all the time when I'm on radio shows, people follow me around. Where's Jim McCanny going to be? Then they call in with a plant question, trying to trick me or set me up. And at the time, I said, there's no issue with Common Ellen, and then it's just a bunch of internet garbage. And so you see that these people are trying to trap me in my material and misuse my material to make false claims, then associate me with crazy people to talk to aliens. And then the white hats come riding in, the discover.com or the other NASA sites, said, oh, don't listen to that. Don't listen to that. Those are just crazy people on the internet. So the white hats come in to save the day and tell you that don't listen to those people. And by the way, it's now clear that with the Comet Elenin thing, they were going to have suicide groups set up and use my work as the cause of it. People were scared, and then NASA could come in and say, look at all of this ridiculous fear-mongering, and it's based on McCanny's work. Well, you can hear on my show, and this is the only place I post on my webpage or on my radio show. I don't go to blogs. I don't have information there. I don't converse with those people. I don't have anything to do with them. But it's very clear that you can come to my show and hear exactly what I say about Comet Ellen. And that's why the Space Ops blog got taken down, because somebody had posted there to come to me, to my radio show, to listen to this, and then you'll get the real story here. There are electrical alignments with Comet Ellen, but they're very minor. They're extremely insignificant, and as I said on a show a couple weeks ago, Earth is going to have a much bigger effect on Comet Ellen than it will ever have on us. We might see some brightening as these next alignments coming into September occur. We might see some inordinate brightening of that comet as it comes up in, I believe, in October. I gave the dates before on the show, but as it comes into a broadside view, we might see some sunward spike activity, and it might be a bigger comet then than what is expected by NASA. They are expecting a small binocular viewable item or object. But it might grow bigger because of the interaction with Earth, the electrical interaction, and might show a very nice sunward spike, which would prove once again that the dirty snowball comet model could not possibly be true, and that the sunward spike is real and it's electrical. Okay, so at any rate, I'd also want to point out that NASA has to maintain this this image of not looking at comets. And it's very clear that the reason for that is because if anything big comes into the solar system, they can deny having any knowledge of it. And now that gets us into the next topic, the main science topic tonight. I wanted to talk, the day before my show last week, a comet came in and hit the sun. Now it didn't, it apparently hit the sun, but a small amount of time before it hit the sun, there was a tremendous CME that came off of the sun on that same side of the sun. And then spaceweather.com, in typical apologetics fashion for NASA, the first thing they said is it only seems to be there. It's just a coincidence. Now, how many times has NASA had to post this same story, that there's just a coincidence, there's no relation between that comet there? It's just like the Wizard of Oz standing behind the curtain, and Dorothy's seeing him manipulating the levers, and he's screaming. And then he goes, don't look at that man behind the curtain over there. Don't look at him. And she can see him screaming it at the same time, and she comes up and she says, hey, you're not the wizard. You're just a guy here. And that's what's going on with NASA. As the Comet Ellen hoax created by NASA comes to an end, and I put the last nails into that and show the public exactly who created the hoax and why. Now, I just want to comment, too. Don't think that the NASA scientists sitting in JPL or in Goddard Space Flight Center, don't think that they're at the heart of this. Remember that the disinformation crew uses NASA and uses the Tier 2 science. And they're the good guys. They're the white hats. And they get to ride in and, gee, have their name in the paper and on the internet being the experts. Doggone, that's swell. But just remember, Tier 2 scientists at JPL, Don Yeoman, and the rest of your crew, you're Tier 2, and there's a whole level of science above you that are laughing at you. And you're there for a reason. You're useful. And your ignorance is part of the equation. It's very necessary to pawn off your crap science onto the public, and that's exactly what it is. That's garbage science used to pawn off on the public to make the public think, well, look at the other side of NASA. The space shuttle is going off. Completely the incorrect way of going into space. But there have been some comments that I do a lot of NASA bashing on this program. Well, that's very true. But remember, they're robbing your birthright. They're robbing your birthright to go into to space and go to the stars. They're destroying the national resource that's being allotted to put man into space and to have a space program. They're misusing and abusing at a criminal level, because space is the most important, by far the most important activity that man should be involved in, NASA being the agency in charge of the by far the most amount of money and resources, and squandering this for 50 years with phony science. Believe me, it's not just a grudge I have with them. You should have a grudge with them too, because they're destroying your birthright to the stars, the resources that should be used. By now, we should be every bit of Stanley Kubrick's 2001. Remember that? Back in the 1960s, the futuristic movie. I saw that movie when I was in college, if you want to know how old I am. And I thought by the year 2001, certainly NASA would have all of those things and more in space. Talking computers, space stations, frequent trips for a common person into the space station and beyond, manned trips to Jupiter. But what do we got? We have nothing. So don't think that I'm NASA bashing. I'm telling you that NASA has destroyed your birthright to the stars, and if you don't think that's a crime or something to talk about, then I guess you and I are not on the same page. Okay, so off to the comet that hit the sun last week. First of all, standard science, of course, claims, and through spaceweather.com, and they say, how could that wispy little comet cause that big CME with millions of tons of matter blowing off the surface of the sun? And they poo-poo the idea. Okay, well, that that begs the question. If it's ridiculous to think that a little snowball could cause that, well, maybe there's a problem with the little snowball concept, because we have hundreds of these videos given to us by SOHO. In fact, a while ago, back when we were seeing dozens and dozens of these back in the 90s, someone went through all the SOHO records and sent me two, not one, but two CDs with all of the events of comets coming near the sun and blowing off CMEs. There's hundreds of these. And so for space weather, very, very, just basically not telling the whole truth, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, they're basically lying by not telling the whole truth. It's making it sound like this was just a coincidence, an isolated event, and don't worry about it. No, we have hundreds and hundreds of videos taken by SOHO of this exact same event, with a comet coming near the sun causing a electrical discharge, and it's like a spark plug. So on to what is causing CMEs with comets, with the comet passing near the sun. And now, not every comet that passes near the sun causes a CME. Some of them don't, but very frequently, and almost universally, they do, the comets that come near the sun. There's some type of solar reaction. There's two parts to this. First of all, the solar model is incorrect, the standard solar model that says that fusion is at the core of the sun. That is absolutely incorrect. The fusion is at the surface of the sun. In fact, the Russians, in coordination with my work back in the 1990s, proved that the core of the sun is planet-like. It is cooler than the outer surface. In other words, the sun gets cooler as you go in And that experiment, how they did it, is in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. It's a very simple experiment explained in that book. So number one, the solar model is wrong. Solar fusion model is wrong. There's another point that was made. I was at a conference, scientific conference, many years ago, and the guy came through and he says, I'm a scientist, engineer, and I used to work in space science, but he said, I stopped because I figured something out. He said, if you take the energy-mass conversion, two simple things. Okay, we know the amount of light energy in all across the spectrum. We know the amount of light energy coming out of the sun. That energy is coming from fusion, a nuclear reaction in which mass is converted to energy. Secondly, we know that there's a solar wind coming out of the sun, and we know approximately the amount of mass that's leaving the sun at any given moment, and you can calculate that. He said, if you calculate that loss of mass of the sun, he said, there's no way that the mass of the sun could support this activity for 4.5 billion years. In fact, it wouldn't support it for very long at all in terms of the 4.5 billion year claim of NASA. But it's a little fact that those people just blindly ignore, head in the sand. We don't want to think about it. We can't upset the apple cart because all of our other theories would be wrong. So what's going on with the sun? Well, the answer is that the sun's fusion is at the surface. So that's the first problem. So what's going on in the surface? Well, it's an electrical fire. How can fusion be at the surface of the sun? Because standard physics claims that you need high pressure. Well, here's the way it works. When there is a large electrical discharge in the solar atmosphere, in other words, solar lightning, the bends and twists in that electrical discharge cause a phenomenon called the pinch effect. The pinch effect is a very high pressure magnetic force that causes very high pressure in the gas in that region. That's where the pressure comes from to ignite the fusion reaction. So you basically have a fusion reaction in the atmosphere of the sun. And of course that would have that the hydrogen and the associated helium and other low mass reactive materials, deuterium, would have to be replenished on a constant basis for this fusion fire for the sun to remain as it is. Secondly, the solar surface is very volatile, rapidly changing. When back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and even into the 80s before there was a camera, close-up camera to view the solar surface, it was believed that the sun's surface would be just a kind of a smooth orange surface, and that's what was predicted by the core model, that as the heat emanated from the central fusion core, according to the standard model, then it would radiate up towards the surface. And as it got to the surface, you would get a nice, glowing, hot ball. Well, there's no reason for matter to be flying off of there, charged matter in by way of the solar wind. There also would not be any reason for CMEs or other explosive type of activity. So all kinds of magnetic explanations have developed, magnetic hydrodynamics. There's other types of theories that attempt to explain this. But using magnetism, and the flaw, of course, here is that magnetism isn't a force on its own. It doesn't just develop on its own. It requires electrical conditions first as the primary mover. So you have a whole body of science which is simply bad science. It doesn't work. The bottom line, the standard solar model has to be incorrect, but nobody can change it because it's published in the journals. And we can't say that the journals are wrong because they're refereed, aren't they? But they were refereed long before anybody had a view of the solar surface. And so with the electrical conditions in the solar surface, now the second half of this, is that there is a corona that surrounds the sun. It's relativistic electrons circling the sun. How do relativistic electrons stay around a sun? It's certainly not due to mass or gravitation. There has to be an electrical interaction, or possibly electromagnetic interaction, so you have a superatom of electrons surrounding the sun. When there is an explosion in the solar surface, the protons come blasting out, and what happens, they are accelerated towards this screen, so to speak, in the corona. That screen will open up, and the protons and other positively charged ions come blasting out. That gives you an excess current of positive charge in the solar wind, which creates a battery, and that moves all the way out to the far edges of the solar system. So when any object comes into this region, including the planets in their orbits or comets coming in, they are discharging that solar capacitor. So that's what a comet is. It's the discharge of the solar capacitor. My plasma discharge comet model explains exactly how that works. And so anyway, now let's go back to a comet coming in by the sun. The comet is already discharging the solar capacitor. The tail material that you see, the dust and the ions and the water, etc., coming in, is being attracted to the negatively charged nucleus. And this is a complicated plasma process, but it's all explained in my books. And I've talked about this extensively on the radio show, but if you want a full understanding of this, you have to get the books and read them. So at any rate, by the way, NASA scientists have been told they're on a gag order. They're not allowed to talk about Jim McCaney or his work. So if you ask a NASA scientist if they understand Jim McCaney's work or know anything about it, they will deny it, even though I debated David Morrison on Coast to Coast in one of the most public broadcasts of all time. NASA claims it doesn't know anything about me. Woo! It's just funny. It's just ridiculous out there. But at any rate, back to this comet that crashed into the sun. By the way, this comet was coming from the south. Let me just give you a few details. It was coming extremely fast, and it points out that NASA, either one of two things. NASA doesn't have the ability to look at comets or see comets because it was totally surprised at this comet coming in and hitting the sun. Or it knew all about it and didn't say anything. Gee, which one do you want to pick? NASA doesn't know anything and doesn't see this stuff coming, or they see it and don't say anything? The end result is the same. You don't get any information. This comet was coming at very high speed. It was coming from the south, the same direction that is visible right now, the southern part of the solar system. Quickly, I saw a note here on my page. I want to interject about the flooding of the Cajun region down in south of New Orleans, an area where I visited many times as I was a student back in the mid-1970s at Tulane University, where I got my master's degree. But I visited the Cajun country, tremendous people, survivors, tremendously independent people in their entire area being destroyed now by the government opening the valves to let the floodwaters into those regions, their entire lives being destroyed. A very independent survivor group of people, lives being destroyed. Now, I wanted to mention also about this comet hitting the sun. And by the way, if you want to see a video of this, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And for every one of these comets which comes in is visible with the SOHO satellite and hits the sun or comes very near the sun, there are hundreds of them that miss and are not visible or not reported. So just remember that this, for every comet that you see like this, there are hundreds coming through the solar system that are not seen. It came from the south. It was very large in terms of mass because it had a companion. It came in with a companion that was quite distant. In other words, it had to have a significant gravitational field. And here again, NASA, these scientists have to know this. Don Yeoman, you know, David Morrison, you guys are PhDs. You can figure out. So when spaceweather.com is reporting that this is a wispy little snowball, insignificant, and couldn't possibly cause this reaction on the sun, Why don't you tell them, you guys are PhDs, you should know this, that the nucleus had to be large gravitationally because it had a companion at a significant distance that it came in with, and to maintain that companion, the gravitational field of this object had to be significant, possibly even the size of Mercury or half the size of Mercury, something significant gravitationally to maintain that companion at that distance. So at any rate, the point is that the comet comes into the region of the sun. It's already discharging the solar capacitor, so it acts like a spark plug. And what happens when more electricity and electrical discharges hit the solar surface? Boom! Fusion, because that's what the solar surface is already doing. Easily explained when you understand the correct theoretical structure. Easily understood by the average man on the street. You don't need a line of lines and rows of PhD NASA scientists to explain this to you. And that's why a lot of people listen to this show, because you get real information, it's explained in a way you can understand, and it's explained in a way that scientists can understand. But isn't it amazing that you can watch them not tell the truth? And this is one of the biggest things that I have to point out here, is that NASA scientists are lying. They're maintaining a lie. Their job as a Tier 2 scientist is to maintain these lies. And what's the point of it? Many points, because if people understood that all this electricity was available in outer space, then it would be clear. What would be the first question out of anybody's mind? I don't care if you're a truck driver. I don't care if you're a Cajun down in southern Louisiana catching crawdads. I don't care if you're a mom up in the northeastern Nova Scotia where you're just taking care of your kids. And getting fish out of the ocean to take care of your kids. I don't care who you are, you can understand this. So why do the PhDs simply not grasp these concepts? Well, maybe their paycheck depends on not grasping it, if you understand what I'm saying. So at any rate, that's what causes a CME from a comet coming in by the sun. And of course, the comet is much smaller than the sun, but it's discharging a very powerful capacitor, and that energy is what is used. And then when NASA comes out and says, we took pictures of the sun, and look, that comet wasn't anywhere near the sun, that's exactly right. It wasn't anywhere near the sun. It causes this at a distance. I'm running out of time. Just remember to visit my webpage. Your purchases on the webpage support this show. There are no commercials. And go to the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, JMCCSCI.com, and I'll see you next week. This is Jim McCanny, this is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.